This podcast is brought to you by My Paranormal Plus Club, where you can get hundreds more classic archived campfire episodes that you probably haven't heard. And we have a tax time sale now. You can get $25 off of a new yearly membership. Pretty cool stuff. Check it out at jimherald.net.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you. And sorry for the switch up on our usual release schedule. We usually release on a Thursday, but it's been a topsy-turvy week. I got back early this week from Denver, where I was recording a TV show with George Norrie, Beyond Belief, his TV show, and was so honored to be a guest on that. That was a lot of fun. And then the rest of this week, we've been doing some touring of colleges with my daughter. I guess it's that time. I'm in my mid-40s, so here we go. But it's kind of put the shows on a little bit of staggered schedule. So my apologies. But we do have for you now a campfire edition, and I hope that it was well worth waiting for, and here it is. Walker is on the line from Georgia. He's been listening since October, thanks to our friends over at iTunes who did a big promotion on us at that time, so we're eternally grateful for them, and we like them very much. And we like Walker very much because he decided to share his story about his childhood home, or I should say stories. Walker, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
All right, well, like you said, you know, these are some stories from the home I grew up in for the most part. Little background about the home. From what I understand, I've never really been able to get a lot of research in it, but from what some of my friends told me, because I moved into it when I was in high school, and some of my friends told me that the owner of the home and possibly two of his wives had passed away in the home.
Oh, my.
But nothing malevolent had ever happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first story that took place wasn't long after we moved in. There was a den in the back of the house, and I happened to be at home by myself and just sitting there watching TV, playing on the computer, and all of a sudden I hear a noise come from the front of the house. I'm thinking, whatever, it's just normal old house noises. Well, all of a sudden, the door that goes to the den, which was closed, just opens. And I'm like, what's going on here? So I try to be rational about it. I call my dad. I tell him, you know, hey, this is what's going on. And all of a sudden, while I'm on the phone with him, I hear another noise, like someone's walking through the house. My dad, who was a police officer, says, hey, I'm going to send someone over the house to stay put. You know, okay. Well, about that, you know, officer gets over there. He walks to the house and says, man, there's no one here. Well, that's weird because I could have sworn somebody was walking through here. You know, I just kind of passed it off and thought of it as, you know, nothing. You know, just file away, try to think about it rationally and move forward.
Right.
Well, the next thing that happened was a few years later when I was in college, and I came home for fall break, and as it would happen again, I'm home alone by myself. And I happened to be staying in my parents' room at the time because they had changed my room into storage or whatever. And
right.
I'm laying there watching TV, and all of a sudden the TV goes black. And I hear this old timey phone ring, like the old school, like.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. And we don't have a home phone. My cell phone's laying next to me. And it's not ringing. So first thought in my head, somebody's in the house. So I look through the house, nobody's there. And I'm like, what the heck? So I call my dad and I'm like, Dad, this just happened. You know, what's going on? He goes, oh, yeah, I kind of meant to tell you. Last week we were laying in bed watching TV, and all of a sudden the TV went out and this devil face appeared on the screen and said, I am the devil.
I forgot to mention that. So it appeared on a screen and said, I am the devil.
Yes. And then Ooh. He heard the phone ring and he was like, I thought someone was in the house. I went through the house. I cleared the whole house, and nothing was there. And I'm trying to think, maybe there was an old phone up in the attic that was connected. So I go up the attic, and I'm looking, you know, because that's where you would put a phone, in the attic. But I'm trying to run through my mind rationally, like, what could have happened that would cause this? Couldn't explain it. And so, you know, that was that story. And then the last one was a few years later, I happened to live in the house by myself while there was some work being done. And so one night I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking myself some dinner. And I'm just cooking dinner, my own business in the kitchen. And I turn around like somebody was standing behind me. And all of a sudden, when I turn around, I got what felt like a puff of smoke, like from a cigarette, in my face.
Ooh.
Nobody in my family smokes, and it just reeked of like a menthol cigarette just out of nowhere. And I never could explain it. It was just the darnest thing. And, you know, as I talked to some neighbors, you know, as the years have gone by, the neighbors that live next door now, they actually grew up next door and had moved in, and I'd asked them, and evidently the man that built the house and was the owner, he liked to sneak cigarettes from time to time.
Right.
So I always thought after I heard that, maybe he was just having himself a cigarette. I don't know, but it's, you know, things I could never explain. And I've always wondered, you know, is it haunted, or is it just, you know, every once in a while someone just pops up to say, hey, what's up?
I'll tell you something. Wow. I mean, between the antique phone ringing, which we have heard on the show, by the way, before, way back, we had someone a few years ago told a story about a phone that wasn't connected ringing. We've had that one. I've never had... Mm-hmm. The devil appear on the face of a television set and say, I am the devil. And he's sure this wasn't a TV program or anything. It's just,
no.
Wow.
I mean, I even asked some friends about, like, was there like something that, like, they said the TV just went off from what they were watching and face appeared. And I'm like, what's going on in this house?
Man.
Never happened again either. That's the weird thing.
Maybe he was just passing through.
I guess. I don't know. But yeah, there was always, you know, weird things about the house that happened. You know, doors would open on their own, and not like doors that, you know, some old houses, the doors don't latch as well as they used to. I mean, these doors, you could tug on them and they wouldn't even open, and they would just open up and then close like, oh, I'm just walking around the house. Don't worry. Don't worry about me.
Wow. Well, Walker, thank you so much for joining us. I got to tell you, that is quite a story.
Well, I'm glad I could share it. I hope maybe someone else had experienced something very similar, and maybe they'll be able to share their story now.
Ramona from the great state of Michigan is on the line. She's been listening for almost a year now. We're so glad to have her with us, and she has a very poignant story about her dad. Ramona, thank you for listening. And please tell us about your dad. What happened?
So thank you for having me. So my dad died about 16, 17 years back. And, you know, it's one of those things when you're young and naive and you don't think about things, you kind of don't realize how important your parents are in your life because
sure.
You're just young and stupid. You know, so this is one of those things. The thing was that our dad was much older. So he was one of, you know, how he was like, I think 42 when he got married. And my mom had us when she was young and my dad was older. So, you know, he was one of those older parents.
Okay.
And, you know, as a kid, you don't kind of realize your dad's older than most parents. We kind of, in the back of our mind, I would kind of feel that he was a little embarrassed because we were so young and he was a little older. He mm-hmm. looked older. So, but anyways, you know, I think that kind of just carried on with us. Like, he never really grew old with us. He was just older when we were young, you know?
I see.
It's just one of those weird things that you never really think about until you're, like, you know, mature and you think about these things and you kind of look back and say, oh, I can see why, you know, because we were little kids and my dad looked like he was a granddad.
Sure.
So, but anyways, when he died, it was obviously a shock. We never expected it to happen. He was very fit, very, you know, no problems, never had anything serious and just had a stroke and he just passed away. And it was, you know, it just rocked our world and it rocked, you know, my family's world because he was the first sibling amongst his siblings to pass away. And nobody on my mom's side, you know, everybody's still there. So anyways, you know, you kind of go through the motions and, you know, he's no longer there and you obviously miss them, but then, you know, life kind of gets the better of you. But anyways, thinking about things now and, you know, back 17, 18 years ago, I just kind of would think about things that had happened. We didn't have any ill will. There was never anything like that. It was just like, I don't think we appreciated him as much as we should have.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of, when as you grow older, you kind of think and you look back and you say, wow, that was really nice. Or, you know, yeah, we really did have a great childhood. And, you know, he was a great man. But anyways, you know, you're just thinking about the past and kind of missing him, you know, seeing my cousins with their dads and, you know, seeing them have a relationship and kind of being a little jealous because, you know, our dad wasn't there anymore.
That's natural.
Yeah. So, you know, and like in my story, I mentioned that he loved old World War II movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of loved watching them because he would watch them with us and he would tell us, you know, this is what happened. And this is, so our interest kind of grew in that as well. And he loved this movie. I don't know if you heard about it or not or seen it. I'm sure you have. The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Sir Alec Guinness. That is a classic. From late 1950s, I believe, 57, 59, yeah. Something in there. Yeah. And it won, I think it won Academy Awards. Very, very famous, theme song too.
Exactly. So, and he would whistle, you know, we obviously saw the movie like 1,000 times and he would whistle that tune under his breath. Never like a loud whistle like it's in the movie. It's always like under his breath. So you would only hear it if you were like standing like within 3 or 4 feet of him or, and he would like go around the house, you know, whistling that tune. But I never, when I would think about him, I would never think about that tune. It would be just, you know, the things that we did and the good times that we had and,
sure,
you know, we missed him and, you know, all of that. So, and just this, that 1 month or those few months, I was just so, my mom was really sick and, you know, it was just one of those things that you kind of think back a lot, you know, you kind of reminisce a lot. So I was just thinking and it went on for quite a while. Like, I think I must have been dreaming about him too, but just in the back of my mind, he was always there.
Right.
So one day at work, you know, just a normal day at work, nothing special. The phone rings and I answer, like, you know, like you do your typical greeting. And I hear this whistling, just like he used to do, like under his, somebody whistling under their breath. And I hear no other sounds. Like I didn't have, you know, like I couldn't hear TV in the background, no noises, no nothing. And I kind of listened. For the first time I heard it, I kind of looked around because I thought maybe somebody was whistling, you know, near me. But then I realized it was coming from the phone. Mm-hmm. And I listened for a minute and I listened again. And I almost said, Daddy. But then obviously I realized, you know, it's a whistle on the other end of somebody's, you know, somebody's calling in. So, and I listen, and it's still there. And I repeat my greeting. And after like 4 or 5 seconds, somebody comes on and says, you know, oh, hi, I just had a question about, you know, whatever we talked about, business. And it wasn't as if he said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Or, oh, I'm sorry, I had you on speaker. Nothing like that. It was as if he wasn't doing anything. You know, he had just come onto the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Answer. So we finished talking about whatever it was, and it was done. I hung up, and for a minute, I just sat there because I was like, that tune, you know, it's not something you hear very often.
Yeah, and I will just attempt to give people a little piece of what I think you heard. I can sing, but I can't whistle, but I'll try. Okay. Did it go something like this? Is that the...
Exactly.
And yes, I'm a horrible whistler, so I apologize, everybody. But
much better. Yeah, I can't do that even. So, yeah, that's really nice. And imagine that, like, under your breath, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it's not something that you hear, you know, youngsters or kids these days or
no.
on the radio.
I mean, you know? I only know it because I'm into old stuff. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how I know it too. I just kind of thought about it and I just kind of tucked it away in the back of my mind. And I had a friend who talks a lot about synchronicity.
Yes.
I think the word is when you're thinking about something and something just comes up in front of you with that thought or that image or the name or whatever. And she and I had talked about it a lot, and she would say stuff like that. And we were talking, and my husband was there too, and I said, oh, you know what? You know how you keep talking about synchronicity? This is what happened to me one day. And she was like, oh my God, that is so weird. You know, that is so amazing. She goes, I have that when, you know, you're thinking about somebody and you see a street name with that name, or you hear something in the news with that name. And she's like, to have it happen so, you know, like to you, like, you know, you actually experience it. It was like, she was like, that's amazing. I said, yeah, I just didn't know what to think. It's never happened. It's not like I was sleeping or anything like that. It was at work. It was wide awake, you know, at work doing stuff. So.
Well, it's a great
one of those things.
It's a great story. And boy, I wish we could play. That's one of the frustrations opposed to this is something like radio. I could just come in with that music perfectly. We can't do that on here. But I do appreciate you telling this very, very sweet story. Ramona, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much, Jim.
Well, I know the tax time can be a drag. But guess what? This is a great time if you want to be a member of my Paranormal Plus Club. Specifically, if you're interested in becoming a yearly member, we are running a special tax time sale available to the first 99 people who sign up. And let's just say it will be 99 people, and we're going to run this till April 8th. So please do go sign up. We would certainly appreciate it. Now, to sign up, here are the steps. Basically, you go over to jimherold.net and you click on the banner that has the little cartoon Uncle Sam. You go over, put in your information. Now, you use the coupon code Uncle Sam. Make sure you use that and you will get $25 off a yearly membership. And not only that, that discount, as long as your account is in good standing, will recur every single year. Geez, if I do this as long as I think I'm going to do it, could save you hundreds of dollars. And what do you get? Well, you get access to 1,100 plus podcasts that are not on the free feed. That includes classic paranormal podcasts. That includes The Campfire. All the time people are saying, Jim, when's the next Campfire coming out? And I say, check out the Plus Club because you have hundreds of episodes over there. If you didn't start back in 2009, and I know many of you didn't, you missed a lot of them, and they're all back there. Plus my Crime Scene show, my Other Side show, my Ghost Insight show, my UFO Encounters show, my Conspiracy Corner show, webinars. We're doing one this Monday with David Weatherly on tulpas. We've done ones on black-eyed kids before, and all these different phenomena. I think you'll love it. It's never going to be cheaper this year than it is right now. It's $25 off a yearly membership. And let's say you're already a monthly member of the Paranormal Plus Club. And you say, hey, maybe now's the time I'm going to upgrade. Just send me an email. Just send me an email at jim@jimherold.com. And I'll work through you so we can convert your account over if you are a monthly member wanting to upgrade to yearly. I thank you so much for listening. I hope you'll check out the Paranormal Plus Club. We thought this would be a way that we could make tax time a little more palatable, especially if you're getting a refund it's a good time to invest in a subscription to the Paranormal Plus Club. Check it out at jimherold.net, and we'll also have a link in the show notes. And now, back to the show. She's been on the show before, and we did not scare her off. Jeannie from Los Angeles joins us, and this time she has a story about a beloved pet. Jeannie, welcome back to the program, and I love these stories. Tell us what happened.
Oh, sure, and thanks for having me on the show again. In 2012, actually in February 2012, my husband and I, we had a pit. She's a blue nose pit, really sweet, love pits. They're just simply awesome dogs. Had them all my life. And my pit, Roxy, her full name was Roxy Roller, all of a sudden she got sick. And kind of backing up just a little bit, it was President's Day weekend, and usually I always go back to my hometown of Chicago to, you know, to hang with my mom a little bit.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, I opted to stay in Los Angeles. So it was a long holiday weekend, and I figured I would take her to dog park, take her hiking, all those other kind of places. But unfortunately, she got sick. And, you know, I thought she just had an upset stomach and it would pass. We'd give her rice, and if that would soothe her stomach, and, you know, by the end of the weekend, she would be fine. Long story short, whatever bug she had totally progressed to the point where she wasn't eating or drinking, which is a huge issue. So my husband took her to the vet, and the vet kept her overnight. And we're both thinking, like, she's a super young dog. She wasn't even, she was only two. She hadn't even made it to her third birthday. So we just really, you know, just assumed that she would get past this particular hurdle and it would be no worries. So the vet kept her for 3 or 4 days, did complete workup and couldn't find anything. So came that following week on Friday, on Saturday, he said, well, you know, I did a complete workup, couldn't find out exactly what the problem is, but you can come by and pick her up. And I think she's on the mend. And I don't know, just something, just the way he said it just made my eyebrow go up and that of my husband's, but we just kind of figured, like, well, maybe once she gets back home, she's in her, you know, in her environment, and she'll just, you know, get on the mend and she'll be okay. So before we could even make it home, and it was like maybe a 20-minute drive, she was already sick. She was presenting the same symptoms that she had before we even took her to the vet, and she started to throw up and just the whole nine. So kind of fast-forwarding a bit, that was on that Saturday. It just continued to go downhill from there. And I called, you know, the vet, and he's like, well, try this, try that. And just everything he suggested didn't work. I called my mom. That didn't work. And I was, you know, just a mess at work.
Because understandable.
And dogs aren't dogs. Dogs are, you know, pets are parts of the family.
Right.
And it just so happened, and I'm going to bring up again that my dog's name is Roxy Roller. And it just so happened that a colleague of mine, who she's a friend, actually, her name is Heidi. And I didn't know her last name was Roller. So she always hear me talking about Roxy Roller. She's like, is that like a family member? I'm like, well, yeah, it's my dog. She's like, oh my goodness. And so she's like, well, what's wrong? And I said, well, you know, she's really sick, and we took her to the vet and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, my father-in-law is a vet, so if you can get her blood work, then I'll send it over to him, or you can, you know, I'll give you his email address and he could take a look at her blood work and figure out what's going on. So long story short, did all of that, got the blood work over to Dr. Roller, and he couldn't figure out what's wrong with her either. But at this point, I think maybe 10 days, 8 to 10 days had gone by. And, you know, he apologized. I can't figure it out. And I'm like, okay, we're going to get around. We're going to get past this. And so that following day, I went to work and I asked for my mom's advice, and she's like, well, try this, that, and the other. My mom is from the South and she has a lot of like home remedies. And,
right.
You know, and I just figured, like, okay, when I get home, then I'll try some of the home remedies that my mom told me and some other family members. And before I could even get home, my husband called me. He's like, you know what? She really doesn't look good. You should get home now. And I was, you know, just completely floored. And so when I got home, and we had, or at that time we had a townhouse. When I got home and usually before I would even drive up to the house, or even if I took the bus home from work, somehow when I got close enough to be able to hear Roxy, I could hear her totally yelping because she knew it was me. And so I just assumed that this time, because she was so sick and I had gotten that call from my husband that he thought that the end was super near, I just assumed that I wouldn't hear her, you know, yelping. So by the time I made it to the front door, I put my keys in. She is like, she had bolted down the stairs and she was yelping and she greeted me home like, oh my God, you're home. And I'm like, honey, why did you tell me that you thought that it was the end? Because she's acting like Roxy Roller, like she's
right.
Cool, like there's no problem. And he's like, she wasn't acting like that a second ago. And I'm like, okay, yeah, right, whatever. I just assumed that he had exaggerated. And so I took her on our walk, and I, you know, during that time, I talked to my mom. I'm like, hey, Ma, she seems to be doing all right, and maybe I won't have to do the remedies that you told me. And she's like, well, that's good. You know, call me back and let me know. And so I continued to walk her, and it kind of gets me kind of emotional now. I continued to walk her. It was dark at that point, and so it was like the only way I could describe it is that she's enjoying her walk, and she's full of life. And then it's like watching a balloon kind of like just deflate, just lose air little by little. And to be perfectly honest, you can't even notice it. But once you blink, you're like, oh my God, it has like completely lost air and it's deflating. And that's how she was on the walk. Mm. And I remember we got to like the end of the cul-de-sac and there was this black cat. And we live in a neighborhood with lots of cats, which is an odd to see one. But there's this black cat, and this black cat just completely stared at her the entire way. And I'm like, what is, you know, it's just really creepy. And so, but I'm watching this cat, and then I go back to watching her. I'm just seeing that she's getting super lethargic and like she could just barely make it. And for a moment, I thought I was going to have to really carry her back to the house.
Right.
So we get back to the house, and my husband's like, see, she's back to being super sick. She just mustered up enough energy, you know, just to greet you, but you know, she was going downhill again. And so my husband was in a play and he's like, well, I won't go. I won't perform tonight. I'll stay home, you know, just in case. And I'm like, no. I'm just going to try what my mom suggested. And
right. And
if anything comes up, I'll call you. And so I think he was gone like not even an hour, and I had to call him to say, hey, it's got progressively worse. I won't go into all the details. Like, it's gotten progressively worse, and I'm, like, super terrified, and I don't scare you, right? But I'm like, we have to take her to the vet, not only because it's, like, really scaring me, because of all of her, you know, all the physical symptoms that she was presenting, but because I knew she was in a lot of pain, and that just broke my heart. So take her to the emergency veterinary clinic, and you know, they just keep saying like, well, we can do this and we can do that, we can do this and we can do that. I'm like, yeah, but that's not telling me what the, you know, like, what is the problem? Just tell me. And that's like a whole nother story and a whole nother issue. It's like they were just totally angling for money, and at a certain point I just asked point blank. I'm like, is there anything that you can do that will fix the problem or tell me what the problem is so that we can get in front of it? And they said,
right.
In actuality, no. And you really need to make a decision. And I'm like, you know what? I refuse to see her suffer. So, you know, I'm going to make the decision just to put her down. My husband is in tears at this point. He's a big burly guy. He's like just totally crying. And so the vet brings her back in and had taken out, you know, her IV, and she walks right over to me and she's standing, and I can tell that, you know, her breathing is labored. I'm like, just go to sleep. You know, it's okay. You can play dog. You know, you don't have to just stay here for me. You go. You know, just go. It's all right. And as soon as I said that, she, you know, she laid down and she literally passed moments after if I gave her something. But I really, at that point, I could just see her surrender,
mm-hmm. And
she did pass. And so fast forwarding that night, once we made it back home from the vet, that was a Thursday night, and she actually died Friday morning at like 1-2 in the morning. And so I couldn't sleep. I was really depressed, and I went to work, even left work early because I just couldn't concentrate. And then that Friday night, just being in the apartment, in our town, it didn't feel like home because she wasn't there.
Sure.
So I remember just having a super hard time sleeping. But once I did get to sleep, I remember, I don't know how to describe this. Do you know, like, maybe, you know, your wife starts talking to you out of, you know, in your sleep.
Right.
And so, you know, it's there. And the more that your wife talks to you, or for me, the more my husband talks to me in my sleep, it, you know, it kind of brings me to, like,
right,
point, like, okay, now I'm awake.
Right.
I was like, oh, I have to get up and I have to do this, that, or the other. Well, I had that same thing, but I felt something just rubbing me on my cheek, just constantly rubbing me on my cheek. And I'm like, what is this? You know, and it just kept, and then I eventually woke up. And once I woke up, I'm like, oh my God, it was a sensation of Roxy looking me on my face. And for me, that was like her just saying, you know what? I know you miss me. And I know you're having a tough time letting go, but I'm all right. So, you know, for me, that allowed me to kind of like have some type of closure.
Sure.
I knew she was all right. So that's my story.
Well, Jeannie, I got to tell you, you know, any of us who have had pets, we've had tough experiences where they pass, but you know, the longer that I think about it, and the more pets I have and more people I talk to, I think they live on as well. And it's interesting because I just spoke to a pet psychic a couple of weeks back. We haven't posted this yet, and it was just a very brief interview, but I went to one of the local metaphysical fairs, and we talked to a pet psychic, and she was explaining to me how they know a lot more than we give them credit for. And Jeannie, I thank you so much for sharing this very poignant story tonight.
Oh, sure. You have a great night.
Carrie is back with us. You may remember a while ago, she had that fantastic out-of-body experience story. It just seems like mere moments ago that we spoke. But Carrie is back, and she's going to tell us about a very interesting research project. Carrie, welcome back to the program. It's going to take a lot to top that last story about the out-of-body experience. If folks haven't heard that, go back in the archives and take a listen. But tell us about this project. It sounds fascinating.
Well, I think I should first tell you how I found the location. And it was a research project. I'm a researcher by profession. I work in an archive. And I do have, fortunately, the time to kind of work on my own projects, which have always been paranormal or folklore related. And about 2 years ago, I started getting interested in foxfire reports or mystery lights or spook lights or just generally any stories of strange lights out in the field that people chase and can't figure out what they are. And there's a lot of them around the United States. So I started reading stories about them and all of the tales and explanations that people come up with. And I started noticing that they all kind of had the same stories attached. It was a miner or a railroad worker that was out with a lantern searching for something, or a Native American lighting a fire to help find the way of someone missing. So I thought maybe I could find a new light if I reversed the research and looked for the folklore tales that didn't have a light attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I took my state and started reading all of the books I could find about folklore and actually UFO experiences as well, because that's basically life in the sky. And I kind of narrowed in on this one region that there's a large national park that I'm familiar with. I got a map and pinpointed where the stories were, and then I got on the MUFON site, the UFO network, and saw, or actually just looked up if there was any reports of UFOs in the area. And they corresponded with the places that I had put pins in for the folklore. So I was thinking, okay, we've got the stories now and the lights in the sky that are being reported, so here's where I'm going to go. So I convinced a friend to go with me. We got in the car and drove 10 hours to the park. Got there kind of early evening, checked in at the ranger station. I told them which backcountry permit I wanted for the site. And I said, unfortunately, there was a guy there, and he, you know, bought a permit for the site for 2 weeks. So I was a little bit bummed, but there were other sites. So I was in the process of picking another one when another ranger came up and said, well, that guy actually left after one night. And I didn't think anything about it at the time. Just, okay, cool, I've got my site. And they made sure we had the right vehicle to get down there. It had to be a 4x4 with high clearance because the roads are bad. they gave us the road report, and we kind of just set off. And it took a while to get down there. The roads were washed out, and there were big rocks and obstacles to get over. But we got there and set up the campsite and started to heat up dinner. As we were doing that, we kind of were looking off in the distance, kind of where we thought the lights might be according to the UFO reports.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw what looked like a star, except this starlight was below the horizon line.
Huh.
So there were stars in the sky. It was dark enough for them. It wasn't completely blackout, but this star was seemingly on the ground. We were thinking, okay, that's odd. We just stared at it. We just dropped everything we were doing. And we watched it, and it started to move. It was moving up and down and back and forth, and it was changing colors, and it split into two lights and then go back together into one really bright light, only to disappear and show up on the complete other side of the valley and start dancing over there. And we're sitting there just kind of dumbfounded. You know, we're not excited yet because we're just a little confused. We know there's no roads out there. There's not even any hiking trails. And my friend started to get nervous and a little bit agitated. I could see that she was a little bit afraid. I know she came with me on the trip, but I don't think she actually thought we'd find anything. But we found it, and it was right there, and didn't quite know how to process it. So I was kind of trying to talk her down, you know, just going over and over again. You know, there's no roads. You know, even if there is a hiker out there, he's not going to be messing with us with a flashlight. He doesn't even know we're here, if there was somebody. You know, the animals don't play with balls of light out in the desert.
Right.
I was just talking to her, and while I was doing that, I was setting up my camera for nighttime photography and the tripod and just trying to get everything right. And she starts kind of yelling at me. She goes, "Carrie, you know, look up, look up. It's coming closer." And I set the camera down. She's like, "No, look, it's coming closer." So I turned around really fast, and this thing was flying across the desert. It was coming straight towards us, which kind of set me in a little bit of a panic because it had been a safe distance away and just kind of dancing around. This thing was coming at us, and it was coming at us fast. So we kind of stood next to each other, and we're just waiting to see what happened. I set down my camera and picked up this really high-powered flashlight that I brought. I was shining it at it, and, you know, I would have seen a car. We would have seen if it was a drone or even a person holding another lantern. But there was nothing there. It was just this circle of light coming at us. And It stopped about 30 feet from the campsite. There was this kind of medium-sized embankment with a sharp slope to the south. And that's where it stopped, just 30 feet away from us. It was just hovering. Looked maybe, I don't know, 45 feet off the ground. It just stayed there. And I had my flashlight still. So, and this happened so quickly, but I was putting the light kind of left to right over it to see again if we could see something besides this circle. And it was kind of freaky because we started to see that it was shaded on one side when we lit up the opposite side. So suddenly this wasn't just a circle of light. It was an actual ball. We could see that it was three-dimensional, but it was still just a light. It was a brilliant white, kind of yellowish, sometimes orange, basketball-shaped ball just floating off the ground 30 feet away from us.
Huh.
So I was going back and forth with this light when all of a sudden I noticed that on the side of the embankment, you could see that it was casting a shadow. So when I moved the light over it, you'd see the shadow of a perfect ball on the side of the embankment. So it definitely had mass. There's something there. And that's, unfortunately, when my friend absolutely lost it. I've never witnessed a panic attack before. I've never been around somebody who's had one, but she completely lost it. She started yelling over and over again, "Carrie, that's not a light. It's a thing. There's something out there. What is that thing? What have you gotten me into?" Just over and over again, repeating, "That's not a light, it's a thing, it's a thing." And her arms were flailing, and I couldn't tell if she was hyperventilating or crying, but part of me was like, I wanted to move closer to see it better. At the same time, part of me was like, I don't know if she saw something that I didn't. So I started to get scared. I got her into the car. I went to the driver's side, we locked the doors, stay in the car for a second, and she's still freaking out. At this point, she's saying, we got to get out of here. We have to move, you know, drive. And I'm like, there's no place to drive. There wasn't, all the ranger stations were closed, and there wasn't a convenience store that was open for 100 miles in any direction. So there was literally no place to go to. And the roads were so bad that I wasn't going to do them in the middle of the night. You know, somebody who was freaking out next to me, it just wasn't safe. So I tried to convince her just to stay in the car, but she was insistent that we leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I said we'd go south for a little bit because at least it was flat going south. So we drove about 10 minutes and just stopped in the middle of the road because there's nothing out there. It's the desert. And kept the lights on in the car and just talked for probably about an hour and a half. We went through every possible scenario that light could have been. But I think she was more worried that it was a person, you know, because in the area there are drug runners and there's other hikers, but, you know, they're not going to be out there with glowing basketballs of light. It just wasn't plausible.
Yeah, it didn't make sense.
No. And, you know, there were wild animals, but none of them play with lights either. So we just kind of talked and talked and talked it to death. Until finally I told her, I was like, we can't sleep in the car in the middle of the road. So we drove back to the campsite, and I got her to get out because the light had gone by that point. It was way off in the valley again, just kind of dancing around like it had when we first viewed it.
Right.
So we crawled up on top of the car on the luggage rack and sat there for about an hour and a half. And I was hoping it was going to come closer again, but it never did. It just stayed off in the distance. So she absolutely refused to sleep in the tent just because we were so exposed. And honestly, we didn't know what it was. I kind of agreed with her, but it was a horrible night sleeping in the car, obviously. And I was waking up every few hours, but around 5, the light in the sky started to turn a little bit brighter.
Uh-huh.
Sun hadn't come up yet. There was no moon. You know, there's still a few stars out and a few little wispy clouds that were pretty. But the sky was turning that really gorgeous inky blue that it does before the sun actually comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out of the car with my camera and started taking pictures. But then after about 4, I saw on the little screen that they were blurry, and I had the settings on the nightscapes that I had before. So I didn't want to mess with those and try to get the lighting right. So I just took the camera back. I woke up my friend and I said, hey, it's morning. Let's go sleep in the tent for a couple hours, which we did. The next morning, we got up and had some breakfast and then went out to that embankment. And where we saw the shadow was exactly about 4 to 5 feet off the ground. And once we kind of figured that out, we were just standing around looking around for some sort of evidence of what we saw. And of course, we didn't see anything. It was just a light. But we looked out across the valley where it had been playing most of the night. And we saw this hill that was completely covered in glitter. We looked at the hill and looked at each other and looked at the hill again. And we were like, can this trip get any stranger? You know, it really did look like there was a hill covered in diamonds.
Oh, my goodness.
It didn't make any sense to us. So we went back to the campsite, got water and our hiking shoes and hiked out there, which took a while. But when we got there, we looked down. It was glass shards. Thousands and thousands of broken glass shards of all different colors. We looked around a little bit more and we found pottery shards and shotgun shells, military buttons, horseshoes, and piles of tin cans that were rusted from old food. So obviously there's been a settlement of some sort out there. And my first thought was, you know, yeah, this is cool, but why in the world didn't that ranger tell us? I mean, he knew where we were going. Usually they're the first ones to be like, okay, there's a historic site there. Don't disturb it. Look for it. Don't take pictures. They didn't say anything about that site. So we kind of explored a little bit and went back to the car. And I had my books with me with the history of the park. And I looked in them to our specific site. And there it was, this 4 or 5 page story about the massacre that had happened at the turn of the century. I'm like, okay, so there's a town out there where this light was dancing over, and there was something described as a massacre with several deaths. Even a child was being described as being killed. the military went out there at some point and couldn't secure it, and they ended up just abandoning the town.
Mm.
We're like, okay, that's strange. I don't know what that has to do with the light, but that's interesting. So around lunchtime, we went back to the ranger station because it was the only place that our cell phones would work, and we needed to just check in with family and tell them we were okay. As my son was talking to her husband, telling her, which I distinctly remember all the crazy stuff Terry got her into, I just went up to the ranger station and started asking questions about our site. And the first thing I said was, you know, okay, what's the deal with that funny light out there? And the ranger, who'd been nice up until that point, just went stone cold on me and said, if you see any evidence of a campfire, please contact the nearest ranger station.
Huh.
And I said, okay, well, this wasn't a campfire. And he just said it again. He's like, ma'am, if you see any evidence of a campfire, contact the nearest ranger station.
Huh.
I said, well, it wasn't a campfire, and I am contacting the ranger station. That's why I'm telling you about it. And he just kind of walked off. And I said, wait. I said, you know, in these books, you know, about the history of the park, they mention a map of this site that we can get at the ranger station. So I was like, can I have one of those maps? And he's like, we don't have any maps. I said, but the book says you'll have maps. He's like, we don't have maps of that particular site.
Interesting.
I said, okay, well, if y'all don't have any current copies, do you have any old PDFs that I could look at? You know, just on your computer, I'd like to see it. And he's like, we don't have any maps of that site. And I was like, I knew he was giving me the runaround at that point. So I was like,
right,
can you get somebody else and ask if there's ever a map of this site? I was like, I just want to know if there was a map at one time. So he goes off in another room, and a woman comes out, and she hands me a map site. So there was one. They just didn't want to give it to us.
That's odd.
Which is very odd, because the place was covered in pamphlets, you know, about the other historic sites.
Oh, sure.
Park. What was it about this one that they didn't want people knowing about? And so I got the map. My friend was off the phone, and she started looking at the map, trying to find anything that might mention the lights, which she didn't. But I was going through my digital camera looking at the pictures that I had taken of, you know, the horseshoes and the military buttons and the little stuff we'd found on the ground. And I got to the pictures that I had taken that morning at 5 a.m. before we moved to the tent. It was those four blurry pictures. And I was just honestly intending to delete all of them because I knew they didn't turn out well until I got to the third one, which had a streaking white light across the top right-hand corner. And I'm trying to figure out what that could be, knowing that the sun wasn't up and the moon wasn't out and the star couldn't have done something that bright, because whatever this thing was up in the sky, it actually lit up half of a cloud that was up there.
Huh.
No idea what it could be. And, you know, I am a photographer, so I was thinking, okay, well, a strand of my hair was in front of the lens and the flash might have caught it, or a bug
right
went behind the flash reflected. But when I got home, I checked the metadata and the flash hadn't been engaged. I mean, I don't use the flash that much anyway. I knew I didn't, but I double checked and the flash is not engaged. It was not a reflection of something in front of the lens. And the fact that it was lighting up the cloud, it was emanating its own source of light that high up in the sky to make that cloud brighter on the end that was closest to it, means there was something up there. And whatever that was, it was right above where we were sleeping in that car.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just sitting there with this photograph thinking, okay, I just couldn't believe it had happened. I mean, I had researched it for a good year and a half, and I'd found the spot and we found the light. Now I had a photograph of it. It was overwhelming, and I had so many questions. And I knew the rangers were not going to be helpful, even if I did show them the picture, so I didn't. But my friend unfortunately didn't feel comfortable at the site, so we had to request a different one and slept on another side of the park. So I didn't get to go back that day. But after we'd stayed another day in the park, we left, and on the way out, there was a convenience store, kind of like the last stop before, you know, 10 hours of road. And we got gas and some snacks. And when we were checking out, I asked the woman who was cashiering, I said, so was there any sort of like electrical storm, you know, towards the east side of the park a couple nights ago? It's like we saw some really strange you know, maybe lightning. And the woman completely ripped us a new one. She started yelling, I am so tired of people thinking they've seen little green aliens out in the desert. We ain't got no UFOs out here. This ain't Roswell. I mean, just wailing at us. So we did the whole, okay, lady, and steps backwards and went back to her car. And for the record, I didn't say anything about it being a UFO, but it did show us that other people have been asking about this light.
So what's your theory? I mean, what do you think it was?
I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks that it could be ball lightning or plasma or something electrical, since there was a spring at the site. But the fact that they were dancing over the site of a massacre makes me think, okay, well, what if this is a spirit, or a spirit that was able to harness something electrical that was all at that site? I really have no idea. I think it's the only odd thing about the light, other than it being a scrolling basketball, is that at the one point it was really far away and it came up right next to our campsite and just stayed there. And my friend really felt like it was watching us or observing us.
Like it had intelligence.
Right.
Yeah, that's frightening. That'll scare you. Well, I've got to say, a fascinating, fascinating story, Carrie. Very unique. Never had one like it on the campfire. And people tend to think the campfire is just about ghost stories. And certainly, probably most of our stories are about ghosts. But there's so many more abnormal and unusual, supernatural or possibly supernatural things that happen to people. And we love to hear about all of them. And we thank you for sharing your story tonight.
You're welcome.
Katie is on the line from Houston. She's been listening for about a year. We're so glad to have her. And like many people, she found us on the Apple app and iTunes, the podcast app. So we're so glad for all of Apple's support in podcasting in general and with this show. And Katie has, well, a quite frightening story about her last apartment. And I'm going to let her tell it to you. Katie, welcome to the program. And thank you for joining us. And tell us this story.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Okay, so we're in a house now, but the apartment that I lived in before, my husband had found the apartment because we needed a place to move just quickly because our lease was up, and he didn't know that the place he picked was not a very good neighborhood, and we ended up stuck in a year lease. And I was pregnant at the time when we moved in. So there was this room in the apartment, it's a two-bedroom, and I always felt like I needed to keep the door shut. It was the baby's room. It was going to be her room after she was born, and I hadn't started decorating it yet, so it was kind of the catch-all room for all boxes. But even though there was nobody in the room, I always felt like I needed to keep it shut. It felt really negative, and I've always experienced ghostly, you know, presences my entire life. I've been called an empath before, just because I always get the feelings, you know, when I'm
right.
in a place that's haunted. So
right.
I just had a really negative feeling about this one room, and I would keep the door shut. And if I was by myself, it was kind of eerie. I even at one point brought out a crucifix out of one of my boxes and I hung it up in the room because for some reason I felt like that would make it feel better. It didn't. But I would notice at night, I would wake up and in the dark, I could see out into the hallway, the wall leading to that room. And several times over a period of months, I would wake up and I would see like a person height shadow cross the wall towards the room mm-hmm. in the dark, which didn't make any sense, you know, a shadow in the dark. And I didn't say anything to my husband because he's always been a little bit skeptical. But if I tell him I hear something or I see something, he believes me. But he usually doesn't see or feel the same things as me. But I mean, if he does experience, he'll tell me. So once we set up the baby's room and we put the crib up and everything, and I put the mobile and decorated everything, I still felt like I needed to keep the door closed. I was actually starting to get nervous about the baby being born because I kind of didn't want to put her in there. It was kind of just eerie feeling.
Right.
And a couple times I was by myself at the house on the weekend because my husband works retail, and I would hear the mobile playing in the room while it was closed. So, like, and the only way you can turn on the mobile is there's a button you have to press, and turn it off, you have to press the button again. And so I would hear the music, and so I would go in there and open the door, and the music was still playing and it's turning, all by itself, and I'm the only one in the house. And so I would go walk in there and just turn it off and kind of stare at it for a second, and then I'd leave the room, and then maybe a couple hours later it would do the same thing. And then this happened, you know, every once in a while over a period of months, and it's getting closer to her due date, and I'm getting a little more nervous. And there was one day I was washing dishes, and when I tried to turn on the disposal, I heard this rattling. And so I thought, oh, I dropped like a spoon or something down there. So it's like the dreaded moment, you know, having to like dig in the disposal.
Ooh.
And so I looked down in the disposal, and I swear to God, there were teeth in the disposal.
Oh my.
Human teeth.
Oh my God.
And like 3 or 4 teeth. And I'm staring at them like it's giving me chills right now thinking about it. And I'm staring at them like, what the hell is that? Why are there teeth in my disposal? And I closed my eyes and I swallowed and I put my hand down there to like scoop them up to like really make sure. But when I put my hand in there, there was nothing there. And when I looked down, they were gone. And I even called my sister and I said, oh my God, I kid you not. I just saw teeth in my disposal. I was like, but they're gone. I was like, is this some kind of pregnancy hormone? Am I going crazy? And she was like, I don't know. You know, she's never had a kid. So later, my husband told me, he was like, hey, I was putting some of our daughter's, her name's Lily, I was putting some of her clothes away in the room. And he said, I'm a little spooked because I was folding them and I was putting them in the closet. And I heard a woman say in my ear, not there. And he's like, it was clear as day. A woman said that in my ear. And he said, I just kind of put the clothes on the floor and I left the room and I closed the door. And I was like, okay, so now I'm going to tell you about all the stuff that's been happening here, you know, like the noises in the shadows. And he was like, whoa. So Google. So I started Googling the apartment complex because it used to be 2 apartment complexes. It's very old. And the owner was one of those like chain companies where they buy apartment complexes and they renovate them and like redo everything. And
right.
He had bought both of them and had made them look identical and everything. So I had to do some digging. And I found out that it wasn't my apartment, but it was the apartment next door. And I've heard of this happening where it doesn't have to happen directly in your place.
Right.
It's like next door.
Right.
So in the apartment next door to mine, a girl had gone missing from College Station, and they hadn't found her for a couple days. And her and her boyfriend had gotten to an altercation over an argument, and he stabbed her to death. And he took her body and put it in the bathtub and chopped it up into pieces. And then he put her pieces on a barbecue on his patio and burned her for 3 days.
Oh, and my gosh.
And when they found her remains, because the neighbors complained of the wretched smell of basically burning flesh for 3 days, guess what they found in the disposal?
Teeth.
Teeth. There were teeth in the disposal. And, like, I read that in an article online, and I wanted to throw up because it was just...
I don't blame you.
Terrible. And so the only thing I knew to do, which was I got some sage and I smudged my house from like every corner of every closet of every corner. And like, I made it all the way around the apartment, like even in like the fireplace and like every, just, I mean like, and I didn't know if I should have been doing that while I was pregnant, but I was like, nope, gotta cleanse it. Gotta get her out of here. Like there's a baby coming. So we get to the last room. And my husband was helping me do this so that I could just, you know, both of us wanted to be involved to like make sure that we just felt better about the space. And when I got to the last room, I actually addressed her before I, you know, got to the front door and like pushed everything out and like, you know, sealed off my door. And I addressed her by name and I told her, like I said, I don't know if you know, but you've been murdered and you died. And then I just felt this sadness and I just started crying and I couldn't help it. And I was like, it was like, I almost felt like it was her, like she didn't know. And I really,
right,
truly believe that she didn't know, because when something terrible like that happens to someone, you know, if it happened really quickly, you know, I don't know if she knew she was dead. And then I told her if she didn't belong here, she belonged in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, and that I was trying to help her get there. And afterwards, it was like lifting a heavy blanket off of the entire place. Like, it didn't feel so weird anymore. And that room didn't feel weird. And the apartment didn't feel weird. And it was just the weirdest, creepiest thing I've ever experienced. And it was just very sad. And it was crazy.
Well, I've got to say, you know, that is really chilling. I mean, that's just a chilling story. And I have heard stories on this program where people have had manifestations in their house, even when something happened next door. In the last Campfire book, Campfire 4, we had a gentleman in England who ended up having this haunting in his house because a woman had been killed during bombing during the war, and she was coming over to his house kind of tormenting their little daughter. So it really is, it is amazing how these things can travel neighbor to neighbor and so forth.
And
so
I think they get confused, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the scary thing to me, is the idea that you die and you don't know you're dead, or you don't know what's going on.
I know
if that is in fact true, that happens to people, that's actually very disturbing.
Very disturbing. It terrifies me.
But
I have
now
one
you're
more story I wanted to tell.
Oh yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, this one's not really that scary. I've always wanted to tell your podcast this story. I keep thinking I should call in. It's kind of scary, but it's more sad than scary. When I was about 9 weeks old, my family and I were in a drunk driving accident. No one in my family was drunk, but we were hit by a drunk driver. And my 13-year-old brother at the time, so he's 13 years older than me, was ejected from our car and then was run over by the drunk driver and was killed.
Oh my.
It's terrible. You know, my whole family, I was in an accident. I don't remember any of it.
Right.
But, you know, so we lost my brother when he was 13. And so apparently, you know, my parents, you know, everybody was in the hospital. They had to use the jaws of life to get everybody out. And, you know, luckily no one else perished because it was me and my other older brother and my mom and my dad. So everybody was in the hospital. Miraculously, I was the only one who was unscathed. Like, I had some glass on me, but I wasn't hurt, which is crazy because I was a little baby. But everybody came home from the hospital because, you know, they'd been, you know, injured so badly. And my older sister, who is 17 years older than me, so she was 5 years older than him at the time. So she was 17 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She was at the house while everyone was at the hospital. And she said about a night or two after he died, she was asleep. And she said her room, she could normally see light in her room, but she said she woke up and she knew instantly that my brother was at the end of her bed. And she said she could feel something sitting on the end of her bed, and she knew it was him, like she just in her gut. And it scared her because, you know, she'd never experienced anything like that before. And so she said, his name was Jason. And she said, Jason, I'm so sorry, but I don't know if you're here to say goodbye, but you're scaring me and I wish you would stop. And so she said instantly he was gone. And then her phone rang. And like the second later, and she picked up her phone and it was her boyfriend, Joe, who also really was a part of her life and my brother's life. And he said, you won't believe this, but your brother was just here.
Wow.
He said, and I just saw him. And she said, he was here too, you know? And so then my mom and my dad came home from the hospital like a day or so later, from their injuries and everything. And, they'd been discharged. And my mom said she was, you know, trying to cope. My older brother, who was the one that lived, was like 4 at the time. And he was on the floor playing. And she said she was by herself. Like, I was down for a nap. And she was trying to fold clothes and just, you know, carry on. And she said she looked to her left and he was right there. And he started talking to her. And he said he didn't have very long to talk, but he wanted to let her know that he was okay. And she said, well, where are you? And he said, and this is so weird because I've heard people say this before. He said, I was lost at first, but I found Granny, who's like his grandma that I hadn't met her. She'd already passed away, like right after I died.
Mm-hmm.
Right after I was born, she died.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I was lost, but someone helped me find Granny. I'm with Granny. And I don't have very long to talk to you, but I wanted to let you know I'm okay. and we're going to go now, and I'm going to heaven. And she said, well, what's it like? Are you okay? What's going on? And he said, it's peaceful, Mom. He said, everything is fine. He said, there are colors that you can't even see right now. He said, and you know everything. He said, anything that you didn't know now, you will know. And any question you have will be answered. And he said, I just want to let you know it's okay. And he said, and I can't come back after now. I just can't. And she was like, okay. And then he was gone.
Wow.
And
that,
like, it was crazy.
That is, that's absolutely, absolutely fascinating. What a great story. What a kind of contrast, right? Your first story,
right?
Terrifying and scary, and the other one, scary in a way, but yet very reassuring.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the way that the supernatural is. I think that there's things that are very sweet, very poignant. And then, unfortunately, there's some things that are downright terrifying. And I think it's just like life. It's a mix. And thank you for sharing some of your life with us and being on the show tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that campfire as much as I did. A lot of great stories, a lot of fun. Also, check out my tax time sale that I talked about. It's a great time to become a member of the Paranormal Plus Club. That's never going to be cheaper this year, so take a look at that yearly membership. I think that you will enjoy it. Now, my college tour continues this week. We're going to be looking at some other colleges. So Campfire will be back on Thursday, April 7th. That's Thursday, April 7th. So if you decide to check out that Plus Club, that's where you can kind of fill your campfire itch until we get back on Thursday, April 7th with a new edition. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time on The Campfire. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.